Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is May 17th, 2010, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 169, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, high-maintenance drama queen. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM. At macobserver.com. Thank you, Melissa.
We have the best sound effects ever.
We do. We do. It's the most accurate gun on the internet.
We do. And Brian, just so you know, you may be high maintenance, but you're not a queen.
but I can be a drama queen.
All right.
I'm definitely not a queen.
Right.
Actually, I'm not a drama queen either.
I
just play one on TV. I'm on Twitter, TMO, Brian with the Y. Blah. I hardly ever say anything. Don't bother.
No, everyone, do bother, because when he does say something, it's usually a gem.
It's a golden gem.
Yeah, it's like digging through a mine and pulling out all of this waste material, and then all of a sudden there's that golden nugget. I'm mixing metaphors. I just turned your diamond into a golden nugget. Now, you see, in comparison, I say a lot on Twitter, and that would be twitter.com/jgamet, and mine's just all that dirt that you keep dumping out, hoping that eventually you'll find a diamond.
Oh, don't even listen to him, folks. He often talks about not wearing pants on Twitter. It's
okay,
true.
There is that.
It's true. It's true. All right. Well, we have a good show. We have some good topics. Interesting things have been happening. So we should probably just get right to it.
Sounds good to me. The search warrant in the case of the stolen iPhone prototype was opened to the public. Adobe's founders are a little cranky over Apple's stance on Flash. Steve Jobs went on the defensive over App Store control. Verizon thinks it can build an iPad competitor. And one guy figured out how to make an iPad worth $187,000.
Soinks.
Soinks.
The story about the iPhone 4G prototype, bought by Gizmodo from one Brian Hogan, is swiftly becoming a bona fide saga, to mix not one but two foreign language words into our podcast because we're cool like that. On Friday, a judge unsealed court documents relating to a warrant that led to the search of Gizmodo editor Jason Chen's house and the seizure of a myriad of devices and computers. The unsealed documents reveal many things, including the following. Now, this is a long list, so bear with me. The device was damaged during Gizmodo's teardown. Apple claimed to police that the device was invaluable. Brian Hogan's roommate contacted Apple security after he used her computer to try and resuscitate the device after Apple remotely wiped it and not stated was, you know, dumbass. Apple CEO Steve Jobs personally contacted Gizmodo editor Brian Lamb to ask for the device to be returned. Apple executives and security personnel met with Rapid Enforcement Allied Computer Team, that's React, to, you know, those who care, to encourage police investigation. Mr. Hogan attempted to hide his computer and other evidence that he had the prototype with the help of a third Brainiac roommate. That third roommate hid a flash drive with photos of the device, and I'm not making this up, under a bush, and then lost the serial number sticker that the two had kept from the device in a gas station parking lot. Oops. And there's so much more. There's so much more. So we have a link to our story in the show notes, and it includes the full, I think it's like 20 pages of court filings, much of which is a police write-up, and it makes for interesting reading.
Wow. We can just stop right there. You've completely entertained me for the night. Thank you.
And good night.
All right. No, I'll keep going. Adobe founders Chuck Genschke and John Warnock have finally weighed in on their company's feud with Apple over Flash in the form of an open letter. The two claim Flash is an important part of the internet, which shouldn't come as a shock. And they suggested Apple is stifling innovation and openness by not supporting their multimedia format on some of its products. In their open letter, they state, quote, "We believe that consumers should be able to freely access their favorite content and applications, regardless of what computer they have, what browser they like, or what device suits their needs. No company, no matter how big or how creative, should dictate what you can create, how you create it, or what you can experience on the web," unquote. Now, that delicious quote was in response to Steve Jobs' open letter. Yes, his precious. From late April, where he stated, quote, "Adobe's Flash products are 100% proprietary. While Adobe's Flash products are widely available, this does not mean they are open, since they are controlled entirely by Adobe and available only from Adobe. By almost any definition, Flash is a closed system," unquote. The feud between the two companies over Flash heated up after Apple changed its rules for iPhone OS app developers to prohibit using utilities that can't natively reference Apple APIs, and that includes things like Adobe's Flash CS5. Now, so far, there isn't any indication that Adobe's open letter has done anything to sway Apple's opinion on Flash.
While we're talking about Steve Jobs, his Steveness, great and glorious as he is, gave us some more perspective about his company's closed platform approach to app development over the weekend. On Friday night, he engaged in an email exchange with Gawker Media blogger Ryan Tate, who challenged Apple's contention that the iPad represented a new revolution. A revolution, contended Mr. Tate, was about freedom. And he asked Mr. Jobs what he thought 20-year-old Bob Dylan would have to say about Apple today, as well as what the guy who played the Yang in the Omega Glory, what he thought about Apple today. Mr. Jobs replied, "Yep, freedom from programs that steal your private data. Freedom from programs that trash your battery. Freedom from porn. Yep, freedom. The times they are a-changin', and some traditional PC folks feel like their world is slipping away. It is. Freedom, in other words, connotes different things to different people, and Mr. Jobs' priority was the freedom of Apple's customers to have the kind of user experience that Apple envisioned." Steve added, "Freedom? You speak holy words." Mr. Tate also offered some commentary on the exchange, pointing out good and bad things both he and Mr. Jobs said, although I don't think he drew the Omega Glory connection, and praising the multi-billionaire for being willing to engage in discussion on such issues.
Yeah, just so you know, your ability to throw a completely appropriate Star Trek reference into a story, some girl out there is going to think that's incredibly hot. Just have to let you know.
Call me.
Call him. Okay. Verizon. All right, third time's a charm. Verizon is working on Google to design a tablet device geared at competing with Apple's iPad. The tablet will run on Google's Android platform, but Verizon didn't say who would be building the hardware it concocts. When asked by the Wall Street Journal what collaboration plans Verizon and Google have, Verizon CEO Lowell McAdam said, quote, "We're working on tablets together, for example. We're looking at all the things Google has in its archives that we could put on a tablet to make it a great experience," unquote. Or, in other words, Verizon is ready to try anything to make its tablet computer concept a success against Apple's iPad, which, by the way, it can't sell data packages for since its network isn't compatible with anything on the planet. Mr. McAdam didn't say when his company expects to ship its tablet device or how far along design has progressed. He did, however, say, according to our own secret sources, that it would be dreamy.
Does that mean you made that up?
Yeah.
Okay. Lastly, we have a red hot story hot off the press. A designer in England has put together a custom iPad designed for the person with more dollars than cents. For a mere $187,000, Stuart Hughes will turn a plain, drab, and let's be frank, ordinary iPad into an iPad with a gold back and an Apple logo made out of diamonds. Your we can't make this stuff up. Your new iPad's back will be made of 22-karat gold.
Oh, I don't want it then if it's only 22-karat.
That's 22.
Oh, wow.
And it will have 53 diamonds in the Apple logo to let everyone know that you can't put your device down on just about anything in your home. If you're interested in the solid gold iPad Supreme Edition, you better hurry, because Mr. Hughes is limiting production to just 10 units.
I hear that Verizon CEO thinks it's dreamy.
He may. Alrighty, that sound means it's time for the Context Machine. That's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. And as much as I'd love to just rant about that the iPad.
Do you want to rant for a minute about the iPad? It's okay. It's our show. We can do that.
Well, it's not really so much a rant. It's just funny. I mean, the thing is just so. I mean, the gold actually looks okay, I suppose, but the diamonds, it's just tacky.
Well, okay, let me put the diamonds in perspective for you. There are more diamonds on that iPad than there are states in the United States of America.
That's true. And they may be worth more than some. No, that's not really true. But the this company, they also make a $1 million TV that's in, basically it's a gold frame with diamonds. They make
Does that mean the shows are better than what I have to watch?
No, it doesn't. That's the funny thing. They make a $300,000 Wii, I think, the $300,000 PlayStation 3. And what they're basically doing is they're taking these devices, they're making a mold, and then they're pouring gold in the mold, and then replacing the back case with that. That's basically what they're doing, and they have an iPhone that I think it's $2.4 million. Seriously, $2.4 million.
I can't even come up with a good joke for that, because how could you top that?
Well, you could make a $187,000 iPad. Why you ask, is the iPhone more expensive than the larger iPad? Less gold, but there's platinum and there's far more diamonds on it.
Oh, see, I figured it's because it had a SIM card slot. I don't know.
A diamond encrusted SIM card slot. I like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's. I don't know. This. I wonder how many units this guy actually sells, and I'm sure he actually does sell. He probably. Well, I don't know. He still has the iPad 3GS available. I think that it's also limited, and that's been on the market for a year. So however many he made, or
but it costs more than the iPad.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah, there's probably at least 30 or 40 more people who can actually afford the iPad. I don't know. It's funny to me because of how bad it looks. So, why someone wants to pay that much money to have something look that bad is beyond me.
My favorite part of the image, or the photo that he made of the bling bling iPad thing. Mm-hmm. Were the little Photoshop Starburst things that were added.
Oh, the lens flares?
Yes.
Ding!
Those are the ones.
Yeah, that's actually pretty funny. That's pretty funny. So, all right, well, anyway, that's the iPad. Let's talk about some serious things. Let's talk about those court documents.
Okay. So, I think the first thing that I need to say is that I was wrong in my assumption that the judge would keep the documents sealed because of the names of the witnesses.
Yeah, you would think so.
That's exactly what I was expecting, and I think I've said in several conversations that I did not expect the warrant to be unsealed, but it was. And there you go. So now we have access to a well-documented soap opera.
Right.
And it really is a soap opera. I mean, just the whole thing with the way they got a hold of the iPhone prototype from some guy that found it at the bar, and then the whole thing was shopping it around and then trying to hide evidence and drawing in the other roommate when she didn't want to be involved. And yeah, it's, you know, it's, I think it goes beyond drama and actually borders on sitcom.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's pretty, their actions are, I don't know. But okay, so I got to tell you, I don't think anyone finding themselves in that situation is ever going to think about it in terms of them stealing. I think that a lot of very reasonable people, of course, a lot of reasonable people are going to do the right thing. They're either going to give it to the bar owner or they're going to maybe even drive it to Apple. Who knows? But a lot of other reasonable people are also going to think to themselves that, you know, maybe they can make a buck on this, and maybe those gadget sites or the, you know, the tech sites out there might be willing to pay them. Of course, there was only one that was, but that's another issue. And they're not going to be thinking about it in terms of stealing. So then they do this thing, and the blogosphere erupts with everybody and their brother saying that, you know, they stole it and they did the wrong thing, and this is a, you know, violation of you know, Apple, and they should go to, you know, the police going to get them and all these things, and they panic. And I think a lot of less smart but reasonable people might try to do some of the things that they did. Try to, you know, at least they thought about the fact that there's evidence on their computer and their SIM cards and their this and their that. At least they thought about it.
I would like to think that more people would do the right thing. And by the right thing, it's what most people just, you know, in the general sense would do, which is go, oh, crap, I found a phone here in the bar. And you hand it to the bartender.
Oh, yeah, but let's say, all right, let's say you and me. Let's say you and I, the you know, editors for a major Mac publication. Let's say we find it and we realize what it is. Are we going to just turn it over, or are we going to take photographs and publish it? I don't think that we'd sell it.
Okay, well, what you just described is a completely different scenario. And what we would do is take photos and publish them and return the device to Apple.
Yeah.
I mean, and it wouldn't even be a question of, well, oh, you know, maybe we should wait, or what should we do? I mean,
no, we just get as much done as we could and then do the right thing. At least that's what I think.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that's exactly what we would do.
And I would be surprised if Apple tried to have the police go after us for doing that. But
no, I mean, and, you know, honestly, I would make sure that we got the device back to Apple, because one of us would walk into the front doors at One Infinite Loop and say, you guys lost this. So we would know that they had it. I'm certain that they have video cameras in that lobby. So when we walk in and hold the device up, they'll have it on video that we're walking in and giving it back to them.
That's true.
But
I'd probably want to have someone else photograph it too, to make sure that I could prove it outside of Apple's videos. But what if that's,
well, that's why we would both be there.
But okay, so here's another thing though, and I can't remember if we mentioned this on the 30th, which was the date of our last podcast. But you know, these guys could have sold this thing for a lot of money to HTC or, you know, any number of competitors.
Right, but their train of thought was the Mac media market.
Right, right. That's absolutely true. I mean, they could have possibly gotten millions for it. I really don't think that's outside the realm of a possibility, and no one ever would have ever known.
Right.
Well, unless of course they told everybody how they got millions of dollars from HTC.
Well, okay, so if they were smart enough to approach it from the industrial espionage side. Mm-hmm. And contact HTC or one of those companies.
Right.
Then they're smart enough to keep their mouth shut.
A company that's outside the I don't think Google would, for instance, do that.
No.
Or you know, and I don't think Verizon would either, but I think that there are manufacturers outside of the U.S. at the very least who would pay money. And maybe not HTC. I'm not trying to malign HTC whatsoever. Not even a little bit. They're doing some really interesting things with phones, and their corporate ethics and philosophies are immaterial to this. I'm just using them as an example of a competitor outside the U.S.
Sure.
And I just think someone would have paid for it.
Right. And to be fair to HTC, they did build the Nexus One. And even though some people complain about it, it's actually a really good phone.
Sure. Yeah, I just don't think it's as good as the iPhone. But that's
right.
Another issue.
Right. But in this case, we have people that went to the media and shopped the device around and got Gizmodo to pay them. And they knew by the time they were dealing money back and forth with Gizmodo, they knew that this was not something that they wanted other people to know about. I'm certain of that. Because they already had the roommate that was freaking out about potentially getting caught because they connected the iPhone to her laptop.
Right. And I don't blame her for freaking out. I find it interesting that she went to Apple instead of the police.
Well,
but at this point, the police weren't involved yet. Or at least not that they knew.
Right. And her going to Apple, I can totally see that because I'm sure she was really freaked out. And she didn't know where to turn, and she thought, "Oh, it's Apple's phone. I'm going to call Apple."
Right.
That seems like a reasonable thing. Now, a lot of other people probably would have gone, "Oh crap, I better call the police so I don't end up getting wrapped up in this criminal action."
Right. She may have even not been thinking. Who knows? We have no idea of knowing what she was thinking. What the police report said she did think, we should probably explain this, is that why she was worried about being caught is that she figured there would be a record of her MAC address and IP address attached to Apple servers for this phone connecting. Because they tried to rebuild it. Right, they tried to reinstall the OS after Apple wiped it because, you know, of course, Apple's just going to let any iPhone 3G or any iPhone 4G out there.
Right.
You know, you don't have to have any special passwords or access or anything like that.
Right. And, my assumption is that since the device is running iPhone OS 4, mm-hmm. that it's not on Apple's servers.
Of course not.
It's only internal. So if you connect the device, it can't find... it can't validate, so it can't be reactivated.
Right. So, and then, of course, we have, Thomas Warner, I think is his name, the third roommate, who went and hid the flash drive and some SIM cards underneath a bush. That just cracks me up. Nobody will find it here.
Under my bush, and he's twirling his handlebar mustache.
It was Mr. Warner that told the police where to find it. Because they panicked and rolled over really quickly,
and,
according to the documents from the police. We don't actually know what happened.
Well, my assumption would be that when they started freaking out and trying to hide evidence, mm-hmm. I mean, they knew that this was going to get really ugly for them.
Right.
And so they're just frantically trying to do anything they can. And then when a cop just shows up, I mean, and they had to be hot on these kids' trail because they found the labels that they lost.
Well, so the kid, yeah, you're right. The kid said that he had lost. He thought he lost the label when he was getting gas.
Right, and so they found the label. So what happens is the police show up. As the kids, or after the kids have freshly dumped their evidence, mm-hmm. and there's the police right there, and they do what most people would do, which is just go, give up. Okay, here's what happened, and probably a little bit of crying involved too, and having to go and change their pants. And so then the police just had everything laid out.
Right.
And at that point, it's a matter of going, okay, so now we have all of this evidence and testimony from this part of the crime. Now we need to go and collect evidence from the other part of the crime, which would be the part that Gizmodo's involved in.
Right.
And so off they go and pay a visit to Jason Chen's house.
Right. Right. And I really kind of I do worry about what's going to happen on that side. I'm always leery of any kind of abridgment of press rights, especially in favor of corporate powers.
It's
always worrisome. But at the same time, I'm certainly, not about theft. And I don't think Gizmodo stole this thing. And I don't think the kid Hogan stole it. I think that he found it. I don't know. He said he did. Or no, he said that the drunk dude said, "Hey, is this your phone?" Who knows? Maybe he actually took it out of the bag. We have no idea.
Well, I have a little bit different opinion on everyone's involvement in this than you do, which is okay because that makes it exciting for the listeners.
Uh-huh.
Now, first off, as far as abridgment of freedom of speech and journalistic rights, mm-hmm. I get extremely worried about anything that could potentially cause issues or restrictions for
any erosion in the freedoms that we know currently. Is scary to me. Any possibility of erosion of those freedoms scares me.
Yeah, and I do not want to see anything like that happen. And so, as such, I am so glad that California has its shield laws to protect journalists and their sources. They do not protect journalists from committing crimes.
Right, exactly.
My feeling, and of course, I am not an attorney, although I did play one in a show once. My opinion is that Gizmodo and whoever from Gizmodo was involved in the transaction broke the law. They bought stolen property. And
yeah,
that,
but there's a lot of states in this country where they didn't knowingly buy stolen property. They thought they were buying found property. I think there's a lot of states where they wouldn't be in trouble with the laws as long as they gave the thing back.
Yeah, well, I have a feeling they'd be in trouble in a lot more places than we realize because they went ahead and did the transaction. So, and what that tells me, if I'm playing prosecutor, what that tells me is if they're willing to pay money for that device, they reasonably believe that it is what they think it is. In this case, an iPhone prototype.
Mm-hmm.
And so as such, they know that they're not supposed to have that, and the people giving it to them are not supposed to have that. But they're buying it anyhow.
Yeah, that's where I started entering the boo-hoo. As I wrote in a column a couple weeks ago now, Apple creates this demand for information, but with its secrecy. And I reject it's the pretty girl's fault for dressing provocatively after she got raped. I reject that comparison because it's not, I don't think it's anywhere near as cut and dry a situation as that.
Now, yeah, and see, in a case like this, I have a really hard time accepting the notion of, well, they couldn't really know. It was, If they're willing to pay for the device,
mm-hmm.
then they have some reason to believe that it's actually this iPhone prototype.
Mm-hmm.
And so if so, then it can't be a device that should be in this other person's possession.
Ignorance is often certainly legitimately not an excuse. I have no doubt that had they understood, for instance, let's say that this same situation happened to another site, Gizmodo, a site that's already approved that they'd be willing to pay for such things, I have no doubt that they won't make that mistake again. And I don't think they would have done it had they understood the way California law applies. I mean, you know, there was a lot of discussion about how California's definition of theft is basically having something you know doesn't belong to you.
Right.
Right. And there, again, there are states that say that, you know, effectively finders keepers, at least, you know, with, you know, more or less limited applications of that. And there was so much discussion about that when those who knew California law started chiming in on this story. I think that that's indicative of the fact that not a lot of people would have thought about it as theft or buying stolen goods. So yes, they may know that they shouldn't have it, but at the same time, I don't know.
Well, keep in mind,
I don't want to belabor the point, but I don't think that it's a cut and dry situation, and I'm going to be disturbed if Jason Chen does time for this.
Okay, so I think that when everything's said and done, the prosecution will be able to show enough evidence to show that all the people involved actually did commit theft. And it wouldn't surprise me if Jason Chen is charged and convicted. Now, whether or not he actually does time, I would be surprised if he does.
Yeah, he's going to be a convicted felon.
Yeah, but
I don't know. It is a little bit disturbing to me. It's disturbing from
the aspect that a lot of people will look at this as a situation where the media is being throttled back by the government, which is horribly unfortunate and in my opinion makes this a situation where Gizmodo acted recklessly and without thought for the rest of the industry.
That's a very good point too. I do think that Gizmodo's open policy of paying for prototypes is not good.
It's horribly not good because you will end up with problems like this. And unfortunately, they have a very cavalier attitude towards the whole situation.
Right.
And so I think that they really fueled the fire.
I also, well, okay, but keep in mind that Mr. Hogan didn't go to Gizmodo. He went to Gizmodo, Engadget, Wired, PC World, and I think some other magazines. So I don't think it can be argued that Gizmodo's bounty offer of unreleased prototypes caused the situation. Because if it had caused the situation, I think that he would have just gone straight to Gizmodo. But, I mean, you know, not that I know.
Well, in this case, it just so happens that it is Gizmodo. It could have
Gizmodo
been.
Gizmodo ended up being the one of the people that he approached that agreed to do it.
Right.
The other magazines, with, shall we say, a little more class or sense, knew not to do it.
Right.
You know, paycheck journalism is always a slippery path.
Yes, it is.
Checkbook journalism.
Oh, I knew what you meant. Paycheck journalism I like because that means we can afford to put food in our mouths.
Yes.
Yes.
But, more or less.
Well, on, you know, most weeks.
All right. So we've already gone way over on this topic.
We have.
So, let's actually talk about our sponsor. We have a couple more things to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But let's talk about the good folks at Citrix.
Okay. And isn't it great Citrix is sponsoring us again?
Yes, they are. They've been really good to us. They help make the show possible. In some ways, literally, because, you know, we have to do the shows.
That's true.
So thank you, Citrix.
Yeah, we appreciate your incentive.
Indeed. And they're sponsoring us with GoToAssist Express.
Which is a very cool product that lets you remotely and securely access someone else's computer with their permission.
Right, and they make it easy.
And that's a big thing. Yeah, easy and secure. Those are two big pluses in my book.
Yeah, which I think that applies not only to those of us who help our family, but also, of course, to businesses.
Right, because this gives you the ability to remotely access someone else's computer and fix things, help them out, train them.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be in the same room or even in the same state.
Or be hassling with really complicated network setups.
Right, because it's as simple as you go to initiate the connection, they get an email with a link, and they click it, and then everything just starts happening.
Right. So it's really kind of intended also for those one-offs as opposed to regular remote doings.
Like right.
Go to my PC is more for the regular.
Right. When you're going to be consistently connecting to specific machines.
Right. And GoToMyPC is also from Citrix, as well as GoToMeeting. So that's where these guys come from. And most of our listeners have probably heard of those products at one time or another. GoToAssist Express is basically their newest product. And it's, like I said, it's allows you to do this easily and without the hassle. And it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's easy enough that pretty much anyone can do this, and you can wow your mom.
And you can wow your mom, yes.
That's right. So we have a special webpage people can go to try this out, don't we?
We do, as a matter of fact. It's gotoassist.com/machine for Context Machine, for the Apple Context Machine even.
That's a very clever URL.
And if you go to gotoassist.com/machine, you can download a free 30-day trial. Setup takes 2 minutes.
And you can start controlling your family's computers and helping them out.
Yay! So we appreciate their sponsorship. We would appreciate it if you would appreciate them too.
Yes, go pay them a visit.
Yep, go pay them a visit. And that's Citrix, and we definitely appreciate their support.
We do.
Yay.
Okay, so we went on and on about the whole iPhone prototype thing. So what would you like to talk about now?
Well, let's talk a little bit about let's talk about this Adobe open letter.
Okay.
So, I don't think it should be any surprise that Mr. Warnock and Mr. Genske released their own open letter and counter to Steve Jobs. I find that their arguments don't resonate as well with me as Steve Jobs' open letter did.
You know, I have some issues with this. The first is that this is an example to me of how Adobe mishandled their disappointment with Apple's rule changes for the iPhone OS developer program. Mm-hmm. Because what they did initially was they let their CEO go out and do his interview with, was it the Wall Street Journal?
Mm-hmm.
Where essentially he sat there and went, nuh-uh, not us, it's you.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was...
Yeah, the open letter was much more, quite frankly, classy and professional.
Yes, and this is what Adobe should have released first.
Yeah.
And followed it up with... But we totally get that the market is always in flux and changing, and there are different things that people need. And so, yes, everything that we just released is heavy on Flash, but don't worry, because we're getting all these other things together so that you will be able to very effectively use all of the new standards and protocols right. that people want to use. So don't worry, you can do all of this with Creative Suite 5. We just happen to be promoting Flash first.
Right, right. And I have a sort of a new thought on some of this that, so their point about, and I'm quoting, "No company, no matter how big or how creative, should dictate what you can create, how you create it, or what you can experience on the web." I agree in principle with that thought. And to me, it sort of, when rereading this, when we were talking about it during our talk through before we started recording, is that I think a great case can be made for Apple to support Flash in its browser on iPhone OS devices.
Mm-hmm.
I, however, am quite comfortable with Apple refusing to let, in this case, Flash developed and compiled iPhone apps from the App Store. It's a different kind of thing.
Okay, I'm totally okay with what you're saying there, and it makes sense to me.
So the other thing, though, is should any company be required to support every technology that's out there on the web. So let's say that a browser, and I don't even think at this point that would, I mean, it would really be possible for a browser to have any kind of plugin system that didn't allow a Flash plugin to be developed. But let's just pretend. If a browser didn't want to, a browser maker didn't want to allow Flash to run in their product.
Oh, I've got it. Links. You can't do plugins into links.
Okay, there you go. So, you know, are the makers of links shafting their customers by now not allowing them to view all the content that they want out there? Well, the reality is that people who bizarrely choose to use links are doing so for a reason.
Right. And because they're still running on mainframes in the basement of some building somewhere.
Sure. And, you know, people that want Flash on their device, of course, you know, actually you can't get Flash on any mobile device yet, can you?
So Flash in the way that people are thinking of it, with the full experience that you get in a web browser on your desktop computer, we don't have that for any mobile phones yet. We don't have Flash at all for smartphones, but on some of the simpler phones, they have kind of this Flash Lite thing, which lets some of the stuff work, but not much of it. And
in a browser or in as, you know, sort of like Flash Lite applications?
Yeah, it's the Flash Lite application stuff.
Okay. All right. So even there, Apple's not doing anything that every other company is apparently doing, although they're not actively keeping Flash out. Adobe just hasn't been able to make it work.
Yeah,
so to a certain extent,
true.
Where's your argument? Not you, but, you know, where's Adobe's argument?
Right. And, yeah, so in that sense, how can Apple be accused of blocking Flash on the iPhone when there is for the iPhone?
They are blocking Flash development. But that's right. What I think they have the right to do.
Right. And for people that aren't getting what we're talking about, Flash CS5 has the ability to take a Flash application and then compile it so it's an iPhone native application.
Right.
And Apple is saying that you can't do that. And there are several companies that are making applications that will let you take code that's developed somewhere else, like for .NET and some other things.
Real basic.
Yes, yes. And then you can compile those. It's called cross-compiling, so that it will also run on an iPhone.
Right.
And since that's those utilities can't directly access the hooks that Apple has built into their developer tools.
All of the hooks. They can develop some of them. They can access some of them.
Right. And, well, what they're doing is they're reverse engineering some of them.
Yes. But that's the problem, is that it's some of them.
Right. And so,
and Apple doesn't want any kind of artificial fractionalization of its platform.
And that makes sense. I totally understand, because they had to deal with this on the Macintosh back in the Code Warrior days.
Right.
Because Apple would update the operating system, and then it didn't matter, because we had to wait for Code Warrior to get updated to support what Apple had done. So,
but that's because Apple had dropped the ball so badly on its own developer tools.
That's very true. They had totally dropped the ball.
The difference there is that Code Warrior saved the day, and, you know, Apple ended up dumping on them.
Yeah. So, well, you know, it was a double-edged sword.
In this case, Flash hasn't saved the day for just about anything.
Right. So, anyhow, Apple has been in the position where they see what happens when they update to their operating system and then have to wait for someone else to update their tools so users can actually take advantage of those features.
Right.
And they're not going to let that happen anymore, it seems.
Right. And I think that that's a perfectly reasonable way to run your platform if you so choose. If the market is going to have a negative enough reaction to it, Apple will end up being forced to change its opinion. I don't think the market will care. And I also think that, you know, if you want to put some kind of gate of some sort on application development, one great way to start is by, you know, making sure everybody's using the tools you want them to use.
That's true. And your comment about most people won't care that they don't have Flash support, I think you're right. I know many people that are on the internet all the time, in their web browser, doing things, and they have no idea what Flash is at all. They just know.
They wonder what the little Lego piece is for.
Yeah, for them, it's just, oh, this website is broken.
Yeah, you know, and if Adobe could make Flash light enough, have a light enough footprint, I think it would be impossible for Apple to keep it out.
Well, I don't think Apple would have any issues with it.
That's true. But that's the flip side of it, is that Apple wouldn't have any issues. I don't know. Before we go on too much longer on that, Adobe's open letter was definitely classy and professional. It just didn't quite resonate as much as with me as Steve's open letter. I thought that Steve made a really good case for why it is that Apple was keeping Flash off the platform with his open letter.
Yeah, and there was a bit of irony in the quote that we included. Mm-hmm. From their open letter about no one should be able to dictate the tools, how you create, and how you experience. When Adobe is the company that sued Microsoft because Microsoft was including a PDF generation tool in Microsoft Word.
Right.
Huh, how about that?
Oh, irony. All right, hey, one more quick thing before we wrap up this episode. Do you think that Google can make a good tablet, especially with Verizon? I'm biasing my question. I know. I'm okay with that.
And I'm okay with that, too. All right, so I don't think Google can make a good tablet because I don't think Google can make hardware. I think if Google partners with the right company, they can make their operating system work extremely well on that company's hardware. That said, I don't think Verizon is going to be that company.
I don't think so either. I think Verizon is too obsessed with making its products have the kinds of limitations that work with Verizon's corporate goals.
Oh, yeah. And not that there's anything wrong with that, except in this case.
There's something there's, yeah.
Yeah. You know, if that's how they want to run their business, fine. But I don't think that they're going to be able to put together a device that can really compete in this new market that Apple created.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so either. And, I think that 10 years from now, Google might be a really, really, really good hardware designer, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe 5 years, maybe 20, maybe 10.
Maybe. You know where I think we need to be watching for the cool hardware to come from in the tablet market? Something that can probably actually compete with the iPad.
HP's WebOS device?
Yes. And who would think that we'd be saying, yeah, we need to watch what HP's doing. But now that they own Palm... Mm-hmm. And have WebOS in their arsenal, that whole slate device that HP, well, that Microsoft, in a very horrible way, in air quotes, showed off at CES. Mm-hmm. That type of device from HP running WebOS, that's something that I'm actually really excited to see.
Yes, in part because HP is going to control the hardware and the software.
That sounds kind of familiar.
I think it could be really, really interesting. I don't think they have the design aesthetics of Apple. I do, however, think they have the industrial design aesthetics. I do think that they have the engineering expertise
to put together
a compelling device. I think that's going to be – I'm actually excited by that. I think that in the tablet world that it's going to be HP – that's giving Apple the biggest runs for its money, and that HP is going to end up doing well with what they end up offering, especially if they, I think HP is going to be better, for instance, at adapting this product for vertical markets, be it education or be it as we talked about before, warehouses
HP already has offices. A lot of experience dealing with vertical markets.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they're very good at it. And the products that they make for those markets, while in most cases they are not devices that you and I would want to use, they are very appropriate for the markets that they've been targeting. Right. And even though their devices aren't as pretty as what Apple makes, in some cases, I mean, I get to look at a lot of the server products and workstation products that HP's making before they come out, mm-hmm. and I look at some of the things that they've done, even though they're not pretty, I'm just thinking, wow, why isn't Apple doing this sort of thing?
Yeah. I agree. So going back to Verizon and Google, my problem is I don't think that any carrier is really a great choice for making a product that's going to be what I, i.e. the consumer, is going to want.
Well, there's already an extensive track record of showing that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And for that, all you have to do is look at most of the basic cell phones that are on the market today. The features have been dictated by the cell carriers, and then mm-hmm. and then the manufacturer, Motorola, Nokia, whoever, builds the phone based on the features that the carrier says they want.
Right, which is why, you know, you could only install ringtones from them, or, you know, you could only install apps from them. Of course, the difference there is that they're the ones charging and pricing the apps. I mean, I know that actually sounds similar to Apple, but you can at least create ringtones elsewhere with the iPhone OS.
Right.
iPhone OS. And I think that Apple's version of the App Store is infinitely superior to the various sort of online through your cell phone place where you can download crappy games.
Right. And then you have the added problem of you can have a company like Motorola make a phone, and then they have to make a version for T-Mobile, a version for Verizon, and a version for AT&T.
Yeah, Verizon used to, and still does sometimes, artificially turn off GPS services in phones because they wanted to be able to sell that separately.
Sure. And then you have the confusion that comes along with, you know, maybe you and three of your friends go out and buy razors, mm-hmm. and you're all on different carriers, and you start to do something, and your friend says, "That's cool. How'd you do that?" And you go to show them on their phone. The interface is completely different on the same phone.
Yeah. 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 So I'm not really expecting really good things to come out of that. I do think we're going to end up seeing some Android tablets that are interesting. Maybe some Chrome OS tablets that are interesting.
I don't think Chrome OS tablets will be interesting at all.
Okay, fair enough.
I think the Android ones will be, though.
I think Android is going to end up getting more attention, that's for sure.
I will agree with you completely on that.
But if someone is really interested enough in making an interesting product, but I don't think they're going to be as cool as the iPad. I don't. I think that Apple is light years ahead of everybody, and they're going to stay that way for a while.
Yeah, I think so. Well, our own John Martellaro talked about that just recently, where he talked mm-hmm. about Apple being ahead of everyone else, and just about the time Apple's competitors think they have it figured out and are ready to release a product, Apple's already gone on to something else.
Right. All right. I hate to say it. I got to go.
Well, then this is probably where I should say, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to ACM at MacObserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to Steveliness.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thank you for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/TMO'Brien.
I was waiting to see if you were going to say my Twitter name for me.
I almost did. So you can say my line.
All right. So now I'll say your line. And you can follow my account at jgamut. That's twitter.com/jgamut. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. That's us and John.
Yes.
Yes. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. We really like that. The bass is by Boom. That was recorded for TMO Special. And who's our theme song by?
The Atomic Love Bombs. That's Push Me Under.
Yeah, great song, which you're actually directly involved in because, you rock.
Thanks.
And that's all for this week.
Stay subscribed.
And we'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
dripping through an echo of the bitter truth. An undated, drenched in fear, the falling rain is creeping near. We're trapped by lies that we don't know. I can't see a way out now. I will not go, no matter how. You push me under, you hold me down. After all, I think I'd rather. I can't see a way out now. I will not go, no. Trapped by